Tuesday, February the 25th. Probably the most memorable thing that I did today was to go this morning at 10:30 to call on the volunteers working for Mrs. Kennedy over in the EOB. I went as a result of about a third-hand call from Susan Mary Alsop. Susan Mary had told Bill Moyers that it would be very nice if I came by and expressed my appreciation, and Bill Moyers had told me, and I'm so glad that they both did, because thereby hangs a wonderful experience. I had made the appointment the day before, and I went over at 10:30 this morning, was met by Nancy Tuckerman, who took me from room to room. There are about 4 rooms filled with volunteer workers. There are a good many Foreign Service wives. I met at least 1 congressional wife, Lucy Moorhead, and was told that there'd been a good many more. There are a lot of Army wives. There are a lot of just plain unidentified housewives. There are women that speak all sorts of obscure languages. They had been organized and put together sometime after the first week after November the 22nd, when it became apparent that it was going to be impossible for Nancy Tuckerman and the staff of 2 or 3 to handle the volume of mail. In fact, one day, a peak day, there were 44,000 communications. Now it has shrunk to about 700 or 800 a day. Some of the Foreign Service wives with language abilities were translating mail from foreign countries. There were envelopes bulging, marked Yugoslavia, East Berlin, Russia. This last not such a bulging one. Large envelopes from every country in the world. And then, of course, the most important part of the file was that marked particularly appealing. Those were the letters that were taken to Mrs. Kennedy to read. They came in poetry. They came in barely legible pencil and paper. They came in the exquisite language of the high and well-educated. And they came bearing all sorts of gifts. I expect Junior Village, at least, has profited very heavily from these. One of the men in charge was one who had served on a PT boat with President Kennedy. And the most surprising thing of all was that Susan Mary Alsop, that fragile, sophisticated, intellectual lady, turns out to be the office organizer, the whipcracker, the one who goes around knowing everybody's name, complimenting everybody to the point where they feel they're absolutely essential and are sure going to get down at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning to work. It was amazing tribute to the way a man had caught the imagination of this country and had held its heart. I shook hands with everybody in all the 4 rooms and thanked them and told them that I too joined with all the people of the country in appreciating the hours and the effort, the heart and the love they'd put into doing this. And then I stopped by to see those folks whom we must have caused so much trouble, Linda Bird, particularly Lucy, and me, the telephone operators. To my surprise, it wasn't in an enormous room full of them. There were about 8 there. I suppose there are peak hours at which there are more. They were busy as cats on a hot stove. They hardly had time to look up and say hello, but I did manage to go down the line and thank them all and tell them how much I appreciated their efficiency and their kindness to us in these past months, because we must have really been a chore. And then I went to the files, which is an enormous room. Our files at present only take up, less than a fifth of the room. The others are still Kennedy files and will be moved to the Kennedy Library. How soon, I do not know. The man in charge has been there through many, many administrations, and it is a science and a love with him. I doubt if he's got any wife or children or anything else except those files. I got back to our part of the White House in time to have a 12 o'clock conference with Walter and the indispensable Mr. West in the Queen's sitting room to discuss household expenses, which is my number 2 bete noire. The biggest one, of course, is keeping up the Elms. We went into all the ramifications of what expenses were allotted where, who paid for what. I came away a little bit relieved. We each had some ideas to offer about how to cut down on expenses. We decided to have an additional meeting with Miss Ann Lincoln, the housekeeper, and with Zephyr. And we're making a start toward putting this place on a more Johnsonian basis and a somewhat more economical basis. Then I had a bite of lunch in my room with Linda Bird and worked in the afternoon with Bess. There was a good picture of Lucy in the Star today, spelled L-U-C-I, and that is quite a flap these days as to which way it's spelled. As for me, why should I object so mightily if my L-U-C-Y chooses to spell it in her own way? I remember when I was about 14, I spelled my middle name, B-Y-R-D, after I had quite given up ever getting to be called Claudia. The picture of L-U-C-I is standing beside a piano, and she's honorary chairman of the National Symphony Orchestra's Music for Young Americans, an annual series of free concerts for high school students visiting Washington each spring. I have the feeling that Lucy is getting more and more incorporated into this life and willing to play a part in it. And I look for happier days for us and her. Tonight is another one of those receptions for the congressional people. They are due at 6. I put on a sort of a gold and silver lamé dress that Lyndon had brought me in Paris quite a few years ago and that I hadn't been slim enough to wear for ages, and went down to the Blue Room to meet them. As I had looked over the list, Charlotte Brooks, Miss Jack Brooks, and Betty Ford of Michigan, a Republican, were the two main ones that I knew and could sort of rely on to help me be hostesses, so I'd had them called ahead of time. As it usually happens, Lyndon was late getting there, and so I had greeted nearly all of the 142 before he came. Linda Bird came down and stood in line with us part of the time and mix and mingle with everybody. She's really just getting terrifically good at that. It was good to see the George Huddlestons and the Robert Jones of Alabama. Clark Fisher was there without Marion. I must say I was interested to see handsome Dick Bowling there with the new Mrs. Dick Bowling, Jim Akin of Texas. There was Mrs. Tom Steed from my old 81st Club, Hazel, who was also a help, and Mrs. William Miller of New York, the wife of the outstanding Republican, who also happens to be a member of my international club and somebody I like, another example of how you don't always dislike the wives of your husband's opponents. I was glad to meet Congressman Carl Perkins of Kentucky, into whose state I'm going very soon, because he's supposed to know more about Kentucky than anybody. After we'd all shaken hands and had a drink, Lennon called the men off to the state dining room, and also, of course, the couple of lady congresswomen. There were about 75 of them, and they had the briefing by Secretary of State Dean Rusk, which was described next day by one of the congressmen as a brilliant analysis of U.S. foreign affairs. Secretary of Labor Wirtz discussed the wheat shipments to the Soviet Union, and Bob McNamara assessed the military status. I took all the ladies upstairs following the same format that we had done before and found the same amount of interest as we went from the Yellow Room into the Lincoln Room, into the Senate Room, into the Queen's Room, which is the loveliest one of all, and down the hall where I like to tell them about the American cabinet makers, and most of all, the interest centered in my own bedroom and the little family living quarters and the dining room. This time, it took the men a whole hour to have their briefing. So when we got together in the East Room for buffet and dancing, it was already approaching 8 o'clock. But at Lennon's request, we had recruited quite a coterie of 6'4" service gentlemen who loved to dance, and they whisked the congressional wives off on the dance floor, and everybody seemed to have a mighty gay time, so that we really had trouble disappearing. About 9 o'clock, I took up my stand by the door about 8:15 in order to make it evident that in case anybody wanted to say goodbye, there I was. But I'm glad to say everybody had such a good time they didn't want to say goodbye. And it was about 9:30 before the last person left. Dorothy McArdle's story the next day said, "Lights blaze at the White House. I'm a little sorry this business of turning off the lights has gotten to be such a thing, because it's really so minor. But maybe it's a symbol of economy." And one guest did note that as soon as we had gone out of a room, somebody came along and began turning off the lights in it.